I'm your host, Pete Bianco, and my guest this morning is Tarek Albiali, and he's joining us from Alberta, Canada, and he is a faculty member of medicine and dentistry at University of Alberta. Welcome.
Good morning, Pete.
I contacted you because I am interested in a technology I was reading about called LIPUS, and I don't know if people call it that, but it's an acronym, L-I-P-U-S.
Yeah.
And could you tell the listeners what is LIPUS and what is your relationship to the technology?
LIPUS stands for low-intensity pulsed ultrasound,
mm-hmm.
which is a form of therapeutic ultrasound. It's different from the imaging one. So when someone needs to know what's going on in the, his or her abdomen, they go and get diagnostic or imaging ultrasound. This is different from what we're talking about today.
Okay.
What we are talking about today, it's called therapeutic ultrasound that's been used for a long time for physiotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last two, three decades, it has been used extensively in orthopedic surgery, especially after someone might get a fractured bone. So instead of having a cast for 6 months or so, they can use this ultrasound, therapeutic ultrasound or LIPUS, 20 minutes per day for a month, and then the bone will go back to a normal condition.
Mm.
So this is just in a nutshell what the LIPUS is.
Now, with the instance of the bone, what is the theory on why it's causing this accelerated healing?
Well, there have been extensive research and over the last few decades worldwide, and they found out that this particular type of ultrasound, it stimulates specific genes inside the bone cells. And those specific genes inside the bone cells makes more bone matrix when bone matrix laid down by those cells is stimulated by the LIPUS. Basically, the bone gets stronger faster than in a normal healing process.
And does that have anything to do with the osteoblasts and osteoclasts, or is that different?
Yes, that's the bone cell that I'm talking about, is the osteoblast.
Okay.
Recently, we found out, actually, that LIPUS can stimulate both osteoblasts, like the bone-forming cells,
mm-hmm.
and osteoclasts, the bone-eating cells. But this has been documented only in cases when we move teeth, because, you know, I'm orthodontist by training.
Right.
So we are dealing with moving teeth every day. When we're moving teeth every day, we need to make sure that the teeth are strong. At the same time, the bone remodel or the teeth can move faster. So this is what we're trying to do right now.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So you didn't invent, or did you invent the method of applying this to the teeth?
Well, yeah, the new device, which is a small piece that can be inserted into the mouth, because before, the only appliance that exists in the market is only for long bones, like for legs, for arms,
mm-hmm.
but nothing for inside the mouth. So when I joined the University of Alberta here, I teamed up with two engineers. And we put the foundation together of a new device for inside-the-mouth use, which has been approved recently by Health Canada for clinical trial. We are using it for clinical trials right now. And maybe the company would be able to get it to patients in a year or so.
Mm. Now, do you have to be a Canadian to be part of the clinical trial?
And no, not really, but the thing is, our clinical trial right now is limited to people that they have braces,
mm-hmm.
And they are diagnosed or they are set for taking out few teeth, because sometimes when people have severe crowded teeth, sometimes we have to take out some teeth to create some spaces. so the orthodontist can make the teeth straight. Mm-hmm. For those people, what we do some experiment on the teeth to be removed first before they take them out for regular orthodontic treatment to see what happened to the roots after we apply a specific type of orthodontic forces and also after applying the ultrasound. The preliminary results are pretty promising, but this is the clinical trial, one of the clinical trials that we are doing right now. The second one that we should start soon is about can we move the teeth faster? It's still not started yet.
So you're using the technology to help the teeth move their position in the mouth, is that correct?
Yes, when we do braces, normally the treatment time is about 2 years on average. Mm-hmm. Some people, they can stay in braces for many years, more than 2 years. So basically, there have been extensive interest worldwide now to try to move the teeth faster. And there is actually a device that's invented originally in Chicago at UIC, University of Illinois, Chicago, and now the inventor in New York City. And this device is in the market now, which actually makes the treatment move faster, the teeth move faster with braces. But the difference between the device that's already in the market and this one is that the ultrasound or the LIPAS one can also prevent root shortening while the teeth are moving. And this has been proven not only by our team, but other three teams in UK and in Japan as well.
Some of the effects that I've read about LIPAS on the internet, and these may not be correct, but I've heard that it can regenerate damaged tooth pulp and regenerate damaged dentin. Is that correct?
Well, it can regenerate dentin, yes. Tooth pulp is still in the lab, at the lab level right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the experiments that I do in my lab. Right now, we try to regenerate the teeth pulp with the LIPAS and also other factors as well. So hopefully, in a year or two, we'll be able to get the message to public, yes, if someone has a damaged tooth pulp or nerve, instead of having root canal, maybe this technology can help regenerate the tooth pulp without having a foreign filling material in the root forever.
Now, if someone was to use the LIPAS and they had already a filling in the tooth, would that cause the tooth to reject the filling?
No, not really. No, basically, the LIPAS doesn't has nothing to do with the regular filling at all. It only works in the roots, the teeth roots, not the crown. So, for example, if I have a filling, the silver filling in my mouth, for example, or the white filling, LIPAS has nothing to do with those fillings at all.
Mm.
Right now, it helps only the roots, the teeth roots, the part of the tooth that's inside the bone.
Mm-hmm.
So with braces, what has been documented now, like if you do braces for more than 2 or 3 years, what happens, the teeth roots can be damaged and can be get shorter. It doesn't happen in all patients. It happens in small number of patients, and once it's happened, the roots, the teeth roots can get really, really short.
Mm.
That can affect the longevity of the teeth. So in those high-risk people, they may still can get braces and also LIPAS at the same time. This way, first of all, they can guarantee that the teeth roots won't get shorter mm-hmm. during treatment. The second advantage that they might get their treatment faster as well.
Mm. What is the, besides the theory of the osteoblasts, and well, in this case, that would be the odontoblast, correct?
Odontoblast and cementoblast, yes.
And so is there any theory that it's working to stimulate stem cells in the teeth?
Yes, there have been recent publications about using LIPAS to stimulate stem cells, not only inside the teeth, but also general like the bone marrow stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been documented in the literature as well.
Mm.
So if someone has a few number of stem cells, they're one of the technologies that can increase the number of those cells is the LIPUS. There are other technologies as well. Some apparatus in the lab, they can make the cells grow faster. But LIPUS is one of them. The advantage of the LIPUS is it can be used in the lab, and also patients can use them into direct application to into their teeth or their mouth or their bone. The other technology that can enhance stem cell expansion or increase the number is basically limited to the lab use.
Mm-hmm. Is there any evidence that other non-bone-like parts in the body respond to the technology?
Yes. There have been extensive research that showed that it's not only bone, but tendons can heal faster because the cells at the tendons and the fibers increases with LIPUS. Muscle cells has been shown to respond positively to the LIPUS. And as I mentioned before, stem cells and the teeth roots, which was my first discovery about 14 years ago at University of Illinois Chicago. That was the first time in history that has been documented that dentin and cementum can be stimulated by LIPUS, and that was in rabbits first, and then now we start to move to higher animals like dogs and also human beings that we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm. What led you to believe that this was possible or begin experimenting in this way? What brought you your thought process to the point of applying this technology to teeth?
Well, originally, I was interested in surgical bone lengthening. A procedure is known as distraction osteogenesis, and the world leaders are actually in New York, by the way,
mm-hmm.
at the New York University.
Uh-huh.
So basically, if someone has a short bone and a normal bone, what has been done over the last 50, 60 years now, the surgeon, the orthopedic surgeon, will cut the short bone and then make an osteotomy or cut, like fracture the bone.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put a special apparatus to fix the fractured bone. And after a week or 10 days, once the bone starts the normal healing, then that apparatus or appliance or device starts to stretch the fractured bone parts away. When they separate the bone apart, basically new bone can be formed and the short bone can be long as the normal one. So basically this has been documented for long bones, but over the last 20, 30 years there has been extensive research in the jaw area and the skull part or the face. So I was doing my PhD at University of Illinois at Chicago when I was doing this procedure in rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I did the bone cut or the fracture in the jaw, I cut the lower incisors as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a few days when I waited to start the bone healing starts normal, I started to apply the ultrasound to one side of the jaw, and that was a discovery when I saw the rabbit teeth start to grow faster on the side that was treated by ultrasound more than the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, we documented by histological studies, and this has been supported, again, as I mentioned before, by other researchers in Japan and in UK, United Kingdom. And they show that this type of LIPUS can stimulate dentin-forming cells, which is known as odontoplasts, and also cementum, which is the outer layer of the teeth roots. It's called cementum, and the cells are called cementoblasts. These are the cells that they lay down the outer surface part of the teeth roots, and it's called cementum. So those cementoblasts and odontoplasts are enhanced or stimulated by this lipase. And once they are stimulated, they can lay down more cementum or dentin matrix. But again, as I mentioned earlier, it's limited to the teeth roots. Now, we haven't started any things on the crown because, you know, this research requires lots of funds, lots of money. And now with the economic downturn that we have in North America and worldwide, it's very, very challenging to get some research funds, especially when there are other priorities like cancer and other like diabetes, something like other systemic or major disease that needs the fund more than dentistry.
So you won't have the opportunity to research it, but is there, in theory, do you think that there's promise for having the crowns respond?
We do. We and I, as I mentioned, we have some fund, but this fund is pretty much limited to the teeth root things, and especially with the gum disease. Now, I have received a big grant from Qatar in the Middle East, and that's about regenerating the teeth roots with stem cells and lipase, as well as regenerating gum disease with stem cells and lipase. We've been trying, our team, we've been trying hard to get North American grants, but over the last 5 years, we didn't have good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll keep trying, and maybe in the near future, we can attract some funds that can support regenerating the dental pulp in higher animals or in the clinical trial settings. So people that they have dead pulp or dead nerve don't have to go for regular root canal treatment. But again, this might take a few years. Depends on how lucky are we getting the research funds and moving forward with our research.
But based on what you've seen so far, you wouldn't want to take a guess as to whether you can regenerate crown material?
The crown material part is the enamel, which is tough because once the enamel is performed, the cells that perform the enamel, very hard to regenerate. It's not like odontoblast and cementoblast. They exist in the, about in the teeth or around the teeth. So it might happen in the future, but again, you need to start by basic science research first to generate cells look like those ameloblasts or the enamel-forming cells. And then after that, once you generate those cells in the lab, then you can start researching how those cells can be stimulated to generate new enamel. And then you can deal with the crowns, which might take many years.
Oh, I guess my tooth anatomy isn't up to par, but I was wondering, so none of the dentin is considered crown material?
Well, no, dentin is considered part of the crown material, but it's covered by enamel.
I see.
So dentin is the core part of the teeth. Big chunk in the crown, and I would say almost 99% or 95%, sorry, of the root is dentin. But in the crown, the dentin is covered by enamel. Once the enamel wears away, the teeth start to be sensitive, and simply this is because the dentin start to get exposed. So the dentin exists in the crown, but it's covered by the hard enamel overlaying the dentin. So dentin exists in the crown, but enamel covers it. It's like in the roots. Dentin exists in the whole root, but it's covered by the cementum.
Now, I know you said that you've been able to regenerate the dentin in the roots. Does it just stop at the dentin in the roots and it doesn't progress to the dentin that's in the rest of the tooth, or it's all of the dentin that's stimulated?
Well, the thing is, for the ultrasound to pass through the teeth and get into the odontoblasts inside the dental pulp, it has to have some media, and which we use the gel. Like when you go for imaging, ultrasound imaging, the ultrasound technician or a doctor will use gel, right, on your tummy. So the gel is very important for the ultrasound to go through the teeth and reach out the odontoblast or the cells that we need to stimulate. So in the roots, it can be easily done through crown, we haven't done it yet through the enamel. So we don't know if the enamel is really actually a good media for the ultrasound to pass through the tooth crown and goes to the dental part of the tooth crown or not. We haven't done this yet. In theory, yes, but this needs to be confirmed in the lab setting as well.
So the equipment that you're using for the ultrasound is very specific in targeting a very narrow portion of the tooth.
It's not very narrow. It's the longest part of the tooth because the root normally is double the size of the crown. So if you have a crown for a tooth that's about 9 millimeters, you expect the roots to be double that length. So it's not narrow in the sense of the length. It's actually longer than the crown and must be longer than the crown so the teeth can stay longer, right?
Right.
So it's smaller, maybe thinner than the crown, but it has to be minimum as long as the crown to stay in your mouth. So, or most of the cases, like the normal cases, the root should be about double the size, the length of the crown.
And you mentioned that you're also having good results with gum disease using the technology as well?
Yes, right now, this part of our grant or research that we're doing right now, we're creating a big gum defects, simulating what people has, but this is in dogs. And we're trying to use the stem cells and with or without ultrasound to see if the combination between stem cells and ultrasound can regenerate the bone around the teeth. So if someone has gum disease, or they call it periodontal disease, mm-hmm. in most of the cases, the gum recedes out away from the root, teeth roots. And if this happens, the bone around the teeth starts to get shorter or smaller. And then eventually, in severe cases, the teeth can become loose, and then some people can lose their teeth. So what we're trying to do, we're trying to simulate this kind of problem in the dogs in an experimental setting, and then we use stem cells of the same dogs and also ultrasound to stimulate or regenerate the bone that's been lost around the teeth roots. So this research is under experiment right now. Hopefully in a year or so we'll have an answer to that the combination therapy between ultrasound and stem cells can be something that can be used in human patients with severe gum disease.
Is there any reason to expect side effects from the technology?
The only side effect that's been reported right now, because the technology enhances cell increase in number, so if someone has a previous or current cancer or tumor, this technology might make it worse by stimulating the cancer cells or the tumor cells. It's not proven yet, but in theory, yes, based on some tissue culture experiments that we did a few years ago on leukemia cells, we found that leukemia cells respond positively by increasing in number in the lab, which means that there is a potential risk here if someone has cancer, mm-hmm. and if try to use the technology, the cancer might actually get bigger or worse.
Now, let's say the example is that the cancer is in someone's lungs. When you're using the ultrasound, it's only targeting that small area of the tooth root. Is that correct, or is it hitting the whole body?
Well, it actually doesn't because... this ultrasound power is very, very small, very, very small. That's why they call it low-intensity pulse ultrasound. It's low, very low intensity. It's way, way lower than the imaging one, the one ultrasound that's been used in imaging or to crush some stones in the liver or in the kidney. So this LIPUS power is not only very low, and when it passes through different tissues in the jaw, for example, it's very, very rare to detected on the other side of the jaw. So let's assume that I'm applying on the outer side, on the right side of the jaw. Mm-hmm. When we detect it from the inside of the same side, basically we're talking about 10% of what we've done from the outside. Imagine just the other side of the jaw. You'll be very, very lucky if you detect any ultrasound on the other side of the jaw. So speaking about propagation or this ultrasound moving through the body, it's very, very unlikely to do anything. So if someone has cancer that, you know, as you mentioned, a tumor in the lung, and it's using this technology in the jaw, less likely that it affects the lung. But if the cancer cells move from the lung to the jaw, then this is where the problem can happen.
I see. How does the ultrasonic toothbrush relate to this? Is there any relationship there or not really?
Could be, but the ultrasound, toothbrush, actually, the sonic toothbrush, their vibration is different from the vibration of the lipos. And for the lipos to work, you have to use it, or someone has to use it, for at least 20 minutes every day, which I don't think anybody does use the sonic toothbrush 20 minutes a day. They use it for maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes at the most. I don't see people using the toothbrush the whole all the time, right?
Right.
And if you use it once or twice a day, it will be limited to a few minutes here and there. And it's not consistent like the lipos. Lipos, you have to use the ultrasound applicator or transducer to the area that you need the effect of minimum 20 minutes a day and for minimum of 3 to 4 weeks to see an effect. Less than that, very rare or unlikely to see any effect.
Let me just take this moment to tell listeners, if you're out there listening and you have a question and you'd like to call in, you're welcome to ask a question. The telephone number here is 859-4200. That's 859-4200. What would be the difference of the effect of lipos on a tooth that had a cavity versus a broken tooth, or it's the same kind of an effect?
Actually, right now, we don't see any potential effects, because once the teeth has a cavity or a big cavity, let's talk about one, like each situation differently here, okay? When someone has a cavity, basically, it's not only the dentin is gone, maybe, but the most importantly, the enamel part of the tooth is gone, and which is very hard to replace. So there is no point that we can claim that lipos can regenerate the enamel. So for now, if someone has a cavity, it has to go through the regular dental procedure, filling procedure. Maybe in the future, once this has been proven in the lab that ameloblasts, or the cells that form in the enamel, can really be stimulated by the lipos, and then you have to take it to the next level, how to do that in the lab in combination, which might take many years to get to the point that a cavity can be treated by lipos, for example. But again, it's not available right now. Mm-hmm. However, if someone has a fractured tooth, then there is a difference between a fractured part of the crown and fractured roots. Fractured part of the crown, still, we cannot claim that we can fix it. But if part of the root is broken, there is a high chance with the lipos that this part of the root can be healed again. We haven't done any clinical trial on human patients with this yet, but we have shown that when we do similar fracture in the tissue culture in the lab, ultrasound can actually stimulate the healing of the root parts. So basically what we've done, we get some teeth, roots, we fracture them, and then we put them in the lab, and then in a group applied ultrasound, in a group, other group we didn't apply the ultrasound. And there was signs of healing in the fractured roots that received ultrasound in the lab. So first of all, we need to prove that in higher animals, like dogs or pigs, because unlikely we can do this in rats or mice or rabbits, because those guys, the rodents, mice, rats, rabbits, their teeth are continually growing. So you can do something in them just to show a proof of principle. But even if you show a proof of principle that this can happen in rats or rabbits or mice, there is no guarantee that this can happen in humans. That's why before you do any clinical trial on patients, you have to use higher animals like dogs or pigs. Once you prove in higher animals that this tooth root fracture can be healed faster by ultrasound, then you can start to do clinical trials. The problem with doing higher animals experiments, again, it goes back to funds. So to do dogs or pigs, for a project that can last for a couple of years, you need about $1 million, which is, again, very challenging to get it this way these days and from a major governmental sponsor grants.
Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the work of Ralph Steinman and John Leonora? They did work on dentinal fluid transport.
I'm sorry?
Oh, they studied dentinal fluid transport, so how the fluids transport through the teeth. Do you think that the lipase is stimulating the fluid transport?
This can be one of the hypotheses that we thought about. But mainly what we saw in our lab and in the different labs also, as reported in the literature, that the cells themselves, they increase, they are being stimulated, and the specific gene that laid out the matrix of the dentin and cementum has been stimulated or increased by lipase. Fluid transport within the dental tissues is also another way of stimulating the cells. So basically the cells, once you start to shake them, and this shaking could be vibration, like the device that's being used for to move the teeth faster, or ultrasound, or fluid transportation, all those kind of shaking mechanisms start to agitate specific receptors at the cell membrane. Once the receptors at the cell membrane start to be stimulated or agitated, then inside the cells, another pathway starts that targets the genes inside the nucleus of the cells, and this is where the genes start to lay down more matrix and in forms of protein that's partially fabricated inside the cells and partially finished outside the cells. So the whole mechanism of shaking the cells, either vibration, ultrasound, or fluid transportation or fluid mechanics, all really to the same similar situation. It comes down to which technique that can be used inside the patient's mouth. Mm. Is it like a big apparatus or a small apparatus that the patients can use it? Eventually, they might get it out of, like on the shelf in the pharmacy, or they have to go for a dentist to have prescription or fabricated in the dental lab. So this is the main question that the regular people, like lay people, a normal person, that they need to look for. There are some devices, bioreactors, flex devices that stimulate cells and shake the cells, and all these are very nice apparatus, but they are quite big. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine someone put like 2 feet by 2 feet apparatus inside their mouth.
Right.
So that's the thing. So basic science is great. It's very important to try to transfer that basic science experiments or research into use by people.
Are you familiar with a musical instrument that comes from Australia called the didgeridoo?
Not really. My kids, they're playing guitar here, but maybe they know better than me.
Well, it's basically like a hollow tube, and people make sounds through their mouth, and it reverberates through the pipe.
Oh, nice. So those people probably, they have bigger mouths then.
So I'm wondering if this is, this kind of, if you were to use that on someone's mouth, if that can stimulate the type of, or even some type of a humming through the mouth can mechanically stimulate this type of regeneration.
Well, the best way to search that is you can get people, maybe identical twins, and then have someone uses this music and instruments and the other one doesn't, and then we can compare the size of the jaw, size of the teeth, size of their mouth, and then we can say yes if there's an effect or not.
And we want to do it 20 minutes a day, right?
Exactly. This is based on this particular ultrasound, so I'm not quite sure for the musical instruments how much time per day it's required to see an effect. It could be different vibration, and different vibration might need, might require different time. Maybe 10 minutes is enough. Maybe half an hour is minimum time that's required. I don't know.
With the, there's something called a sonic accelerated fracture healing system that's using a burst width of 200 microseconds containing a 1.5 megahertz sine wave with a repetition rate of 1 kilohertz. And so how were those numbers arrived at? Who first decided that 1.5 megahertz is a good frequency to use?
Well, this is the same LiPos that we are using right now, the same parameters. And as I mentioned earlier, there was a small company in New Jersey, actually, who started this business in North America. It's called Exigen, and that this has been bought by a bigger firm now, other company. So basically, there have been extensive research in the lab and on animals and in human trials in orthopedic surgery about bone fracture. The leaders in this experiment to lay down the foundation of those parameters that you just said or mentioned, the Chinese researcher, his name is Tsai, T-S-A-I. And he did different types of vibration or ultrasound, different types of parameters of intensities, smaller than 30 milliwatt per centimeter square, higher than that. He tried 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 20 minutes, 15 minutes. So he found that this is the optimum parameter that the bone cells respond positively with that. So if you apply less than that or more than that, you can get actually the reverse of the effect, not stimulation, but the other. Exactly. So that's why, based on that, different companies worldwide start to fabricate like just one output and that's it, so people don't mess around and increasing or decreasing the intensity or use different frequently. So this way you can get consistent output or consistent results. However, there are other companies in Europe and in Japan, they produce a machine that can actually get different outputs. Pulse ultrasound or continuous ultrasound and different output of in terms of power. However, the risk with that, if a patient messes around and tries to do some experiments on themselves, then they can get the opposite effect or opposite results. So it's very important to get to the point that, yeah, this is the one that's set and it's been proven in the lab in animals and higher animals and in patients, this is the optimum parameters that should be used for this particular purpose, and then just set the machine for that. And this way, you don't expect people to play around with the machines at home, and then they can claim that there is no effect.
Right. I was reading another book called The Calcium Paradox, and it's talking about the role of vitamin K in the body, K2. But it talks about as children are first developing, if if their bones begin to calcify too soon, then they get stuck with the narrow jaws, and then they get the crowded teeth. And, and it's the vitamin K2 that's been proven to help to keep the calcification from taking place too soon. And this is studies based on the work of Weston Price. I don't know if you've heard of him. He was a dentist in the 30s. And the question is, do you think that what the you're using the lipus with orthodontic trying to reposition the teeth, is it getting the jaw back to this state where it's back into a kind of a more malleable, like a cartilage-like state?
Not really. As I mentioned earlier, we tried this lipos to enhance the growth of jaw. But because the power or the intensity of the lipos is very, very low, it's the effect is just limited to the teeth, not the, to the jaw joints. To get an effect on the jaw joints, you have to apply the lipos to the jaw joints. It actually stimulates the cartilage that's forming the bone. It doesn't go the other way, and simply because, as I mentioned earlier, this type of ultrasound or lipos is basically set for a specific parameter. So less likely it can go both ways, like enhance and decrease. But if you have, we haven't done a research to yet to increase the ultrasound or to minimize the ultrasound to the jaw joint to see the effect, if there is an opposite effect or not. Have been some publications recently that show that when you increase the time of lipos, actually the stimulatory effect is increasing. As long as you are not changing the parameters, meaning the 200 microsecond sine wave, 1.5 megahertz, 1 kilohertz, pulse repetition frequency, as long as you are not changing those parameters, just increasing the time can increase the stimulation. So going back to your question, we hardly use the lipos on very, very young kids. No, we haven't used it on like 2 or 3 years old kids. There's only one report that we reported on patients with craniofacial anomalies. We used this ultrasound in the youngest kid was about 4 years old, and the oldest was like 12 years old. Again, we showed that with this ultrasound, you can stimulate the jaw growth in one side of the jaw that's been has a defect. Again, that publication is limited to few number of patients, which is really hard to draw a conclusion. You have to have a big center like SickKids Hospital or New York, University of New York, something like a big center with a craniofacial center that you have lots of number of those patients, and then you can set a strategy for patients at age 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then there are different criteria as well you need to set to make sure there is a direct effect and what the threshold of those kids. You can come up with a conclusion that, yes, this particular ultrasound is not good for this particular patient, but it might be good for similar patient with this kind of criteria. So maybe in the near future, in a big center like New York or SickKids University Hospital, this kind of research can be performed. I'd be more than happy and open to collaborate with them if there is a chance to.
What does it mean when the tooth has a gray look to it?
Well, a gray look to a tooth could be if one gets hit into his or her tooth, the nerve might be dead, and if the nerve is dead, then the tooth can be gray. That's most likely what happens. Or if someone has a big silver filling This can reflect also on the color of the tooth as well.
Mm-hmm. In the first case, is there any chance that the lipase may be able to stimulate the nerve back to life?
Well, according to the lab experiments that we have done so far, yes, but we haven't done higher animal experiments yet.
Right.
So wish us luck getting some grants money. So we can do this experiment on higher animals like dogs or pigs.
Well, maybe some people with gray teeth will chip in to the cause.
We have a specific research account at the University of Alberta that receives donations. If someone has money and wants to help with this kind of research, they can email us and then we'll direct them to the appropriate research office that they can accept donations into this research account.
Mm. Well, we only have a few minutes left, but after an adult tooth is pulled, can a new tooth grow back? Do you ever see that with or without using lipase?
No. It's very hard to do that. All the publications right now, they're trying to generate or grow teeth back. Basically, what they get the tooth bud of a growing tooth that inside the jaw, and then they do it in a different format and they implant it back. But with lipase, there is no way that we can create new teeth right now.
Mm-hmm.
So again, when the first media released, that was in 2006, there was misunderstanding by public about that lipase can grow back teeth.
Right.
Not really. No, that's not true. Basically, what it does, again, it stimulates the root to grow, not the whole tooth. So if someone lost a crown or cavities and stuff like that, there is no way that lipase can stimulate or regenerate the cavities back right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the future, using stem cells and lipase, this can be done, but again, you have to have specific cells that produce dentin, cementum, and enamel. So once you have those in the lab, or once you can create this in the lab, and try to put them back into the patient's jaw, then this might happen. And the lipase will be something just to enhance the process, not to create the whole cells.
So where will people go to find out, you know, when lipase finally reaches the market? You know, how will we be aware of when this research is complete and it becomes a consumer product?
Consumer products, there is a company in Alberta now, a spin-off company. It's called Smile Sonica. It's the one that holds the patents right now of the lipase, the intraoral lipase or the mouthpiece lipase. Smile Sonica, and they can follow up us also on at University of Alberta website, and I'm sure once we prove that a breakthrough can happen, or this ultra-specific ultrasound for root resorption repair or enhancing tooth movement is available for public, I'm sure people will know about it, and the company will start to do some marketing, direct marketing.
Well, Dr. Tarek, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thanks, Pete. Thank you, and have a great day.
You too.
You're welcome.